Good morning, everyone. I'm Asha Nayaswamy. We're continuing with our shelter-in-place conversations. Let's start with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, dearest friend Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow to you all. Help us to lift our energy to match your divine vibrations, that we may merge our consciousness with your consciousness, and walk through this world with deep awareness that we are never alone, that we are never without a guide, that the experiences of our lives are not without deep divine purpose. Awaken us to this inner truth. Fill us with your joy. Om peace. Amen. Now we're continuing our series about the eight manifestations of God. The introductory talk I was explaining about how incredibly useful they are. Excuse me. This is a different cough than the usual one. This is a weird little tickle. It's going away now. I have a joke. It's not a joke. It's a grim truth that there's a special set of little demons that incarnate entirely and only to wreck recordings. They, at least for me, they followed me around for a great deal of my life and would just wreck recordings in various ways or another. I affectionately called it the curse of the mummy from some archaeological period of time when I must have offended the mummy and the mummy came after me. So now this one just felt like there's some little similar little creatures that have incarnated that hide somehow behind my ears and then jump into my throat sometimes when I want to talk. Now, yes, there's probably a much simpler explanation than that, but this one is much more fun. Now it's gone back to its resting place. So when I was talking about these eight manifestations of God, the point is, we often talk about that we should be a channel for the infinite, we should be in tune with the infinite, even my prayer, lift our vibration that our consciousness can merge with thine. But it's very hard to make it specific. It becomes very much of an abstraction, and we're supposed to be a channel for God, and we don't know whether to suddenly speak in a deep voice and act like Moses coming down with the, you know, the whatever, the tablets like this. Did you ever see that wonderful cartoon? And it's a picture of Moses, and he's standing on the top of Mount Sinai, and he's holding the stone tablets that became the Ten Commandments. And it says Moses was the first person known to have downloaded onto a tablet from the cloud. Okay, moving right along. But it's very hard for us to sort of see the burning bush and know exactly what we're supposed to do because we have ordinary lives. So what the eight manifestations do is they give us an idea of what quality of consciousness I can manifest. And because there's eight of them, love, joy, peace, calmness, energy, wisdom, power, light, sound. I mean, that's going to be nine because I said energy and power is two, but they're really the same one. In every circumstance, one of those is going to work. So far I've talked about love and I've talked about joy because there's times, for example, when you don't really love the people around you. There's times when you don't feel joyful. And now we're going to talk about peace. And there's times when you don't feel peaceful. But there are times when peace is really what we're trying to access. It also, it just gives us something concrete to do. It's if I'm feeling just a little off, you know, what quality can I find? It's very interesting. There's a huge archive. Library of chants written by Master, written by Swamiji. Swami Kriyananda has written almost 200 songs with words. Master has written a few songs as well. All of them have different vibrations. All of them have different qualities of consciousness. And when we sort of use everything that we have access to, then there's always going to be a way in any particular moment to uplift either our own consciousness or uplift the situation. And peace is a beautiful aspect of divinity. In the Bible, Jesus speaks of the peace that passeth understanding. It's because in all of these, we have to make the distinction between a brief cessation of activity in the outer world, which causes us to feel peaceful. You know, the house has been filled with guests and everybody leaves. And oh, now it feels so peaceful here. The children are finally in bed after, you know, perhaps a tumultuous bedtime ritual that didn't work as well as it often works. And now it's so peaceful that the house is quiet. You get up early in your own home before the sun is quiet up, and there's the whole world sort of feels at peace at that point, even before the birds are awake. And these are all external experiences, but what we're really talking about is the peace that is deeply inside ourselves, and the Sanskrit word for it is shanti, which is different than the cessation of outer activity. And feeling peace in yourself is also being at peace with yourself. And it somehow about something about this COVID experience, which has stripped away a lot of things that we used to do. A friend of mine, actually in India, was just talking about her. She's been living over there. She's American, but she's been living over there for maybe a dozen years. And she had a certain number of ways she had of coping with being out of her own culture, which also involved visiting the Western sectors, visiting the international sectors, often going to some of the finer hotels, not because she had a taste for luxury, but because it was a very peaceful environment. But now, at the moment at least, everything has shifted. And she was just talking about being able to say, well, I'm just never going to be able to do that anymore. And she talked about the great sense of freedom and the great sense of peace that came when she just let it go, instead of being in a stressful state where I used to have this, I've always felt I needed it, I still want it. There's a great peace that comes when you just let it go. Now, of course, you don't want tamasic peace. Tamasic is there's three energy forces, the gunas, they're called, and the tamo, raja, and sattva. Tamo is the downward pulling, where there's peace, but the peace is because we have no energy or we've just given up. Tamasic is just lowers your awareness. Rajasic energy is just busy. It can be either busy moving upward or busy moving downward, but it's busy. And sattvic is the shanti, is that which really elevates us. So we want to always be having the peace of release that comes from releasing into the infinite and letting ourselves rise, taking the ballast out of the balloon. That's what we want. When the basket under the hot air balloon, that image, and the hot air of the balloon is wanting to take it up, but you have weights in the basket and you untie the weights, you either untie the strings or you literally take weight out of the basket, and then all of a sudden it's able to rise. That's the kind of peace we're talking about. When we realize, I don't need this anymore. I was watching myself in this COVID cycle, because this is being recorded now, wherever we are, July of 2020. And somehow in my mind, I had set an arbitrary end date for this. I mean, I'm sure a lot of us have done it. I live in California, and you know, we were opening up again, and then everything, all the cases are rising. We haven't closed down, but we're far from out of the woods, and I was really impressed by how I was rebelling, inwardly rebelling. And I had to just finally realize that my response was adolescent, was the only word I could think of. I want it to be different. Thinking of a child who lived in one of our ashrams in San Francisco many years ago, he must have been 4 at the time, very, very strong-willed child. And it was a 5-story house with this huge staircase that went up the center, because we had like There were 45 rooms in the house. We had like 30 people living together. I mean, none of us could have afforded to live in such a house on our own, but together everyone could. But this little boy, he woke up really early, like at 2 in the morning. He was totally bored. Nobody else was up. And so he just crawled out of his bed. He walked and he stood at the top of the staircase and in his giant voice just shouted into the house, "I want it to be morning." As if he did that, then everybody would just get up and start their day. And I realized that's a lot of what we do. That's how we disturb our peace. We disturb our peace by creating agitation. And this is what's actually happening. I don't want it to happen. I don't want it to happen. I don't want it to happen. So we're just, and if no matter how much willpower you set against reality, reality will always win. That little boy had absolute willpower, but he was setting himself against the movement of the sun and the earth. And he did not have the power to rearrange the sun and earth. I mean, an avatar could have done that, but he was not an avatar. He was just an ordinary, strong-willed, not ordinary, but strong-willed little boy. So we're always setting ourselves at odds, and then there's a constant inner disturbance. So I was realizing that I was just setting myself at odds. I was beginning to make up facts. I was beginning to make up science. I mean, you can find anything you want on the internet, but when I actually thought about it, there was absolutely no basis for what I was deciding, except I want it to be morning. So then, actually, just for fun, because I lived in a monastery for the first 10 years of my spiritual life, and I'm a sannyasi again now, I've bookended various other experiences with a deep state of renunciation. But in the early years, especially, I had this picture in my mind of monasteries. Ours was Ananda Way, renunciation for a new age. So I wasn't behind a grill with one of those black habits on, and I didn't have a day that was defined hour by hour. But I would often think about that. I would think about, because past life memory, there I was doing it again. So in this situation, especially when I heard from my friend about the freedom of just realizing I'm just not going to do that anymore, I thought, oh, I've entered a new kind of monastery. Now I live in a monastery, which we're always living in a monastery, in the sense that a monastery is a place that is wholly dedicated to the search for God, that has its own lifestyle and its own rules based on the objective. And the objective is divine realization. I'm talking in an ideal, not in every human organization. But I realize that God Himself has created an unusual monastery for me right now. And it just has certain rules. And those rules greatly restrict the options that are available to me. They greatly restrict how I can interact with people and when and under what circumstances. And if it's chosen on my own, if I myself embrace it rather than feel that it's imposed upon me, it's my choice for my own good. But bear in mind, you see, all circumstances are actually your choice for your own good, even though you might not remember choosing them, and even why it's for our own good might not be immediately obvious to us. That's simply what's happening. If it's given to you, it's karmically appropriate, and if it's given to you, it's a gift from God. And if we simply say, oh, this is what I do now, then there's just this deep release that happens, and this calmness sets in, because this peacefulness inside ourselves, because calmness is something I'm going to speak of tomorrow. But this deep relaxation, and this is why Jesus called it the peace that passeth understanding, because it's beyond reason. And often we can feel extremely peaceful when circumstances are quite painful and tragic around us. But we feel peaceful because we're no longer setting up a counterwave to them. Now, again, don't misunderstand me. That doesn't mean that you sink tamasically into nothing can be done about it, so I might as well accept it. Acceptance is not passive. Acceptance is recognizing the reality that I'm working with And then whatever action is going to come is going to be based on a realistic acceptance of where I am. And oftentimes, you know, once we come to peace with our circumstances, then we can pull in another one of the divine qualities. Maybe we have to start thinking in terms of wisdom, and quite likely we have to start thinking in terms of energy. But wisdom and energy are not contrary to peace. Peace is, I'm at peace with what's happening, meaning that now I have to do this, not I'm at peace with it, now I just get to go to bed and never get out of bed again. So peace is also very, very dynamic, because it also has to be maintained by a constant awareness of, you know, in the simplicity of the circumstances I'm living in, relatively speaking. It's been very interesting to me, because small aberrations show up more than they have when I'm more rajasically engaged and driving my car and going places and, you know, doing things, sitting in restaurants, talking to people. Not that I honestly have much of a life before. Much of my life is not that different. I don't go out in my car anymore, and I don't do my own grocery shopping. So it's less active. I have less input from the outside. So whenever my thinking goes a little astray, I feel this aberration. I woke up one morning just a couple of days ago, and I had gotten myself involved in a tiny kerfuffle. I mean, it was a very tiny kerfuffle, but I had made some decisions that I don't think were the best decisions. Consequences were almost insignificant. But it was interesting, because I woke up in the morning and I felt uneasy. And I thought, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then I remembered, oh yeah, I just created a kerfuffle yesterday. I wish I hadn't done that. But it was so apparent to me that, oh look, just this little bit of a regret, dis-ease, impulsive, unthought-out behavior, and all of a sudden my inner peace was disturbed. So when you're in circumstances where everybody is agitated or excited about things, sometimes a few deep breaths, bringing your attention to the point between the eyebrows, even actually just like moving out of the situation a little bit, and just remembering, you know, this is just a moment in time. This is just one chapter in the drama. We are going to have to gather ourselves together to respond to this. And the more inner peace I'm holding, the more I can also calm everyone down. I've mentioned before that my parents never really accepted or understood my spiritual path, but they liked me and we liked each other, so it wasn't an issue between us. But toward the end of my mother's life, when she was unwell and I had to be there often to help her through the complications of age and declining capabilities, she said to me, I don't know why, but I just like having you around, she said. And then she kind of gazed off to the side like this and said, maybe it has something to do with what you're doing, which was the best I ever got from her. Believe me, it was fine. I didn't need her to tell me that I was okay. Thank you, God, I didn't. I didn't need her to tell me that I was okay. I knew what I was doing. And actually, I was very touched by that, because if you are conscientiously living, you know, manifesting these different qualities, including the quality of peace, which, you know, so many people are peaceless. They're just always slightly uncomfortable, slightly tense, slightly agitated, slightly worried, or massively so. And if you just come in with an aura of peace that passeth understanding, that is not about the circumstances, but is just my inner reality, is Shanti. My inner reality is Shanti. I'm always in this state because I'm not resisting. You know, the absence of peace is conflict. I mean, that's what you're at war, and then you settle for peace. What is war? Conflict. What is conflict? Something is happening. I'm against it. Now, again, I want to say that doesn't mean you don't feel called to try to create a new reality. But to be called to try to create a new reality is different than I want it to be morning, than just banging your head against it. I wished I hadn't done that. I want to be somebody else. Why is this happening? Must we keep wearing these masks? Can't I go out dancing again? You know, I want to have a party, whatever it might be. Bang, bang, bang. No, I've entered a monastery. I actually entered the monastery when I was born, because we enter a physical body and we're now under these circumstances which are completely different, and they're all for God realization. I mean, I'm speaking of when I was born. I have a physical body. I'm limited in these ways. I have karma that is now activated. I have other people in my life. Do I go to war with my circumstances? Do I come to peace with my circumstances and then use the energy that I would have spent for conflict to find creative solutions? You know, these feelings of peace come on us. Sometimes you just never know when they're going to come. But once you have a taste of what that feels like, it helps us to... There's an element in the spiritual life of creative visualization. And if you use it correctly, it's very, very helpful. And this is the details of it that are important to understand. There's one way of making yourself feel better, which is by wandering off into a fantasy. And that fantasy, I mean, some people, some children, some adults, spend a lot of time fantasizing. They just imagine circumstances better than this one. They imagine if they're single and they wish to have a partner, they imagine meeting this wonderful romantic meeting and all the things that might happen. Or they just use your imagination and you go somewhere. You do that kind of subconsciously. Daydreaming. I don't mean creative dynamic daydreaming. I just mean daydreaming, just trying not to be here. Then there's another kind of visualization that people use, which is a guided specific visualization in which you take yourself somewhere that you'll enjoy more than here. And you run on the beach and there's a white unicorn that comes and you get on the back of the white unicorn and you grip its beautiful neck and its white mane is blowing in your face and you fly off. And I mean, these are just like totally fun, and you just go these places and you let your mind run free. And it's a fun exercise. But what you're thinking about is imaginary. It's not like, if I keep thinking about it, I will meet that white unicorn. At least you won't, if you maintain sanity, you won't meet that white unicorn. But the kind of visualization that is actually very important for the spiritual path is that we use our creative abilities to bring us into a state of consciousness that is actually real, but not quite ours yet. And it's best of all, it's based on conjuring up again whatever true glimpse we've had of what we're trying to manifest. And now we're talking about these eight manifestations of God. Likely, if you're listening to this broadcast, you've had some experience. You've had some moment of true peace, or of transcendent bliss, or of deep unconditional love, which is the qualities we were talking about so far. Just a time when a certain kind of peace descended that passeth understanding, that was not based on anything that you could quantify. So we conjure that back. And anything that has ever happened to you of a superconscious nature is still there. Superconsciousness is not subject to time. So when we conjure it up again, we're actually revisiting that memory, that experience in the timeless zone, which is, we live on the periphery of the wheel, so to speak, and the closer we move toward the hub of the wheel, this is where timeless superconsciousness exists. So we get caught out here and we get caught in all the details. But we are also connected by the spoke, which is our individuality. Our spoke of self goes all the way from the edge of the wheel to the hub of the wheel. And at different times, once we become serious about the spiritual path, we have moved some distance, maybe even almost all the way to the center. We may not have been able to hold it. To be able to be there all the time is to be self-realized. But there's a huge progression. So if we've ever touched it, it's still waiting for us. So we bring it back to our awareness. We remember it. smriti. We remember that superconscious state. And even though it's partly an affirmation and partly a visualization, we are visualizing something that actually exists, that is part of our nature. It's not a white unicorn, or it's not an imaginary romance. It's something that actually exists. So even in visualizing it, what happens is we move our vibration closer to it. And because it's also a living, active force, it moves closer to us. So what starts out as an affirmation or a visualization or a memory suddenly turns into a present reality. So it's very powerful whenever the divine touches us. In fact, just to finish that thought, Swamiji said to us once at the end of a satsang, he says, when divine realization comes, when liberation comes, he said, you look back at all the hundreds of thousands, millions of incarnations we've lived, and we realize that it was all just waves on the ocean. It was never really there. It never really happened. It was just light and shadow, like a just a film that played out, but seemed to be enduring, but really wasn't. Whereas every time we have touched into divine reality, in any lifetime, in any circumstance, we look back and all those experiences are still there because they were real. Real in the sense of eternally lasting. So that deep peace within us is a real experience. And when we know that we need it, when we feel this is the aspect of God that I can tune into and live in and share with others and manifest in my consciousness now, if we call upon it deeply with memory and with a little bit of imagination as to what it would feel like, again, our vibration will lift and the truth of that vibration will descend and we'll find a power that we didn't know was there. I remember once I was sitting with Swami Kriyananda and Seva, my friend. She and I were often with Swamiji. This was very early. Seva and Swami were doing something together in one part of the room, and I was out of Swami's line of sight, and I was just sitting. And I don't know why, but the peace that passeth understanding descended on me. And I was just very, just, it wasn't only that I felt joyful. I was absolutely still, just still in a way that I rarely am. That's why it stays in my mind. And then Swamiji said, I was a few minutes past, and Swamiji said, Asha, are you still here? And I said, yes, sir, because I was behind him. He couldn't see me. I said, yes, sir, I am here. He said, why can't I feel your consciousness? And I said, because it's far more peaceful than it usually is, sir. And then he was silent for a moment. Then he said, ah, there you are. And he sort of found me in a vibration that I didn't usually have. And, you know, it was a very sweet moment. He never turned around and looked at me. I wasn't there because he was looking for me where I usually was. But I had moved. And so ever since then, and I'm talking like 40 years ago, whenever I know what peace feels like, and of course, there have been other incidences since then, but I know that when my moment of liberation comes, that moment's going to be there. And it wasn't of my own doing. It was grace descending, but it was a gift to be a bookmark so that when I know that, oh my gosh, the situation's so chaotic, you know, or my inner world is so chaotic, I need to find that peace again. And we practice. And then we put a groove in our consciousness. Ah, this is the road to peace. And whenever peace is what I don't have and peace is what I need, well, I know this is the spoke I follow. And we do it with faith because we know it's always waiting for us. And the more we practice, the more we attune, the more easily that door opens for us. Well worth learning, my friends. God bless you.